heard a thing one time that said they had to add a few little facts. The man said it's corroborative details to add verisimilitude to an otherwise unconvincing narrative. But we'll get this set up. This we're being recorded over here for posterity. So I don't know whether I need to give attribution on these stories or not, because I learned most of them from other people, from books. This one actually I got out of a children's book. It's the story of Tom O'Kelly, who was a peddler in Ireland. And Tom was a very successful peddler, but not because of the goods that he sold, but because of the stories that he could tell. Tom would come into town and he'd spread out his wares and he'd say, "You know what I saw coming in? I saw an enchanted prince. He was in the ditch outside of town." Said, "He's enchanted to a pig." And he'd spin a marvelous tale about this enchanted prince. That's Patrick O'Leary's pig. I mean, everybody knows that. But this is a marvelous story. Well, people would buy Tom's goods and listen to his tales. And Tom became widely known and very proud of his ability to blarney. And finally, one day, someone said, "Tom, you've got to be the best there is." And Tom says, "Aye, that I am." He says, "I can out-blarney the king of the leprechauns." Mistake. The king of the leprechauns heard this. "So, O'Kelly thinks he can out-blarney the leprechauns, does he then? We'll see about that." So Tom was heading for the next town that he was going to sell his wares in. And the road became confused and foggy. And when he came out into the clearing, he was in the court of the king of the leprechauns. And the king says, "Tom, lad, it's glad that I am to see you. I've been hearing good reports about you. I understand that you're a tale teller of the first magnitude." And he says, "For that I want to reward you. You see yon ring sitting under the tree with a green emerald stone?" He says, "I want you to take that ring and wear it as a token of my esteem." Well, Tom was very happy and proud about this. Oh, a gift from the king of the leprechauns. So he went over and he picked up the ring and he slipped it on his finger, and the king says, "And now I've got you. For that is the ring of truth-telling. And you'll no longer be able to tell anything but the truth." And he vanished, and Tom was sitting under a tree beside his familiar road. Well, Tom went on into the next town, and as he looked, he saw a cow off in the pasture. He said, "Ah, there's a dragon. I'm going to tell about that." And he got into town and said, "Well, Tom, what have you got for us?" He said, "I saw a cow in the field." Try as he might, he could tell only the truth. This is a terrible thing for a storyteller. Well, people had come to buy Tom's wares for his stories, not for the wares. I mean, you could buy them anywhere. Everybody sold needles. Every peddler sold needles and thread. And poor Tom was like to starve to death. Well, he heard that there was a great fair in Limerick, and he thought, "Well, here I may have some good fortune." So he went to Limerick. And as he came into the fair, there was a big stage set up, and it was the championship of all Ireland for storytellers. Somebody, "Up! We might as well go home, boys. Tom O'Kelly's here." He says, no. He's like, "I can't do it." No, Tom, you must get up and tell us a tale." Tom got up and he says, "But I can't. I shouldn't be here. I can't tell tales anymore." He said, "I was vain. I bragged about my tale-telling prowess. I said that I could blarney better than the king of the leprechauns. And don't you know he heard me? And he gave me this ring. And it's the ring of truth-telling. I can't take it off, and since I've put it on, I can't tell tales. I can tell only the truth, and I've got no business being up here at all." And the judges looked at each other and said, "The clear winner. There's no way in the world anyone could top that." And they gave Tom a big sack of gold. Well, Tom left the road, and he bought himself a little farm, and he settled down to farm, and it was quite successful in the main. And eventually the king of the leprechauns forgave him and allowed him to take the ring off. But forever after that, Tom was not vain about his storytelling. Now, I don't see my son, who came up with me, and his buddy Andrew, because they wanted to hear this next story. But that's the way it goes. I like to tell stories that give people information. I was outside coming up here, and I thought it was would be nice if the wind would pick up a little bit, because we could use a breeze that would dry things up and it wouldn't be so muggy. It'd be nice to be able to see the wind blowing and see if it's coming again. You know, you can see the wind. There's a way to do it. If you rub sow's milk in your eyes, you'll be able to see the wind. Have you ever seen anybody raised on a farm? Well, an old sow, when the weather's going to change and get nasty, she'll start gathering up moss and leaves and push them up into a pile to make a bed to get in so she's protected. And this is because pigs can see the wind. Fact. I was raised on a farm. My grandfather raised hogs. And I got some sow's milk one time and rubbed it in my eyes, and it scared me half to death. I ran home and hid under the bed for 3 days because the wind is blood red and it just comes at you from all directions. It's just very confusing. You know why the wind blows? Anybody know why the wind blows? What'd they tell you in school?
Because the air is always moving.
Why is it moving? They told you stuff about barometric pressure, didn't they? What are they teaching you? The wind blows because she's looking for her children. You didn't know the wind had children, did you? They're not teaching you kids anything anymore. It's all computers now. Of course the wind has beautiful children. They're beautiful, they're smart, they're talented. And the most unusual thing about them is that instead of having hair on their head, they've got beautiful white feathers. Now, Mrs. Wind was always bragging on her children. My beautiful children, my smart children. And Mrs. Water was getting pretty sick and tired of it. One day, Mrs. Wind's children said, "Mama, can we go down to the lake and play before supper?" And Mama said, "Yes, but don't go in the water. And you be back here in time for supper. I don't want these beans and rice to get cold." "We'll be back." Well, come supper time, the beans and rice are ready. No children. Mrs. Wind. And she goes stomping down to the lake. "Miss Water? Miss Water?" "Yes." "Have you seen my children?" "What children?" "My children." "Oh, you mean your smart, beautiful children?" "No, I haven't seen them." Well, Miss Water was telling the story there. But when those children came down to the lake, they did what their mama told them not to do, as children will do around water. They waited just in the edge. And boy, as soon as they stuck a toe in, Ms. Water grabbed them, and she pulled them right down to the bottom, and she held them there. "Don't teach Ms. Wind to brag on her children." "No, I ain't seen them." "Oh, maybe they're climbing up in those trees. Well, let me go look." So she blew up through the trees, blew so hard she blew all the leaves off the trees, calling her children. No children. I wonder if they went down to the quarry in that cave. Ooh, I'll skin them alive if they did. Down into the cave she went, blowing through the cave. No children. Then she started to get worried. "You don't suppose they caught a ride and went into town to go to the movies?" Off she went to the city, blew through the tall buildings, blew up the papers and the dust, all over. No children. Now she's worried. She's scared. She's blowing all over the world looking for her children. She's calling them. Children. Can't find them. Because they're down there under the water. Ms. Water's got them held down. And every time Mrs. Wind blows out across the water, the children hear, and they try to get up to her. But just as they get to the surface of the water, Ms. Water pulls them back under. Now, I can see a look of skepticism on your faces. But I can prove that what I say is true. Have you ever seen the wind blowing across the water? What does it do? Makes waves, right? Foam on top of those waves, right? That's not foam. That's the white feathers on Mrs. Wind's children's heads just breaking the surface of the water before Mrs. Water pulls them back down again. And now you know why the wind blows. Let's see, what's another do you know? Oh, that story, by the way, was from, I learned that by way of Zora Neale Hurston. It comes from Eaton. There's two stories combined. The sow's milk to see the wind blow, and it sort of leads right in. These are stories from Eatonville. You need to learn about Zora Neale Hurston. She was quite an impressive lady, and she collected some stories that'll knock your socks off. I'm learning some of them as I go. Oh, absolutely. I'd eat fried chicken before I tell you something wasn't true. Do you know why dogs chase cats and rabbits?
They want food.
Very close. Very close. Well, you're both right in a way, but this is the reason why. You see, the dog and the rabbit were best friends. The dog sang and the rabbit played the banjo. And they were both courting Miss Cat. And every evening they'd go over to Miss Cat's house and they'd sit out on the porch and they'd serenade her, and Rabbit would play the banjo and Dog would sing. But after a while, Rabbit started getting the idea that maybe Dog was getting a little bit the best of this, and he started getting jealous. He thought Miss Cat was paying more attention to Dog than she was to him. He thought, I'm going to fix this so I will win Miss Cat and Dog will be out of the race. So one evening they were getting ready to go over, and he said, Dog, let's try that new song that we were working on. He took his banjo out and he started rapping on it. The dog started to sing, and he stopped. He said, Dog, what's the matter with your voice? What on earth is wrong? Dog said, is something the matter? I said, yeah. He said, it sounds all horrible. It sounds all scratchy. Dog said, la, 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 la. Sounds okay to me. He said, no, there's a scratch in it there. You can't hear it, but I can. Whew, he said, I got better ears than you got. He said, I can hear it. Let me look in your throat and see if there's something in there. He looks, Dog opened his mouth and Rabbit looked in. Forevermore. He said, you got something caught back in there on your voice box. That's what's causing the scratch. He said, let me go get a pair of tweezers and I'll get that out. He said, you can't sing like that. He said, well, you wreck your voice forever. You just try to sing like that. Dog said, well, thank you, Rabbit. I appreciate that. So Rabbit went in the house and got a pair of tweezers. What Dog didn't realize, the rabbit slipped a razor blade in his paw when he did this. He said, all right, open wide now. I'm going to reach in there with the tweezers and get that. And he reached in there and he took that razor blade and he made a little slit in Dog's voice box. He says, there, got it. I said, don't talk. He said, because it's irritated. He said, it'll be okay by the time we get to Miss Cat's house and you can sing. But he said, don't try to talk till we get there. Give the irritation a chance to soothe down a little bit. And he gave Dog a little drink of soothing syrup to drink to help soothe his throat. Off they went. Well, they got over to Miss Cat's house and they got up on the porch, and Rabbit said, okay, he said, we're going to do a new song for you. And he starts playing the banjo and Dog starts to sing. And the cat, who was very sensitive, was so frightened by this that she ran off. And Dog runs after, calling to her, wait, I want to... It's a new song. I want to sing it for you. But all he was, the sound that he was making was, and suddenly he realized why the cat was running. His voice was horrible, and he realized that Rabbit had sabotaged him. He turned around and looked, and he saw Rabbit slipping off behind the bush. I'll get that rascal. And off he went after him. Come back here, he's yelling. Come back here, except he's going, Well, ever since then, every time a dog sees a cat, he tries to explain to her what happened. But the cat don't want to listen. Cat's gone, man. And of course, every time he sees a rabbit, he wants to catch that rabbit and beat him good because he wrecked his voice. Now you know. There's Laura. Now, Laura, what was the story that you wanted to hear? Or was it Andrew that wanted to hear the story? Those boys are off there somewhere. Oh, well, he missed it. Son of a gun.
You can tell him when
you get home. You can tell it on the bicycle. Oh, well, he gave away the story. That's all right. That's all right. I'll tell that one another time. This is another story about animals. This is about how the cat got his drum. Now, cats have a drum. Take this as gospel. You'll understand. Cat and rat were best friends. They lived right next door to each other. Every day they'd go out together and work in the garden. And every evening they'd come visit. And sometimes cat would come over to rat's house and sit on rat's mat. Sometimes rat would come to cat's house and sit on cat's mat. And they'd sit and talk, drink tea, enjoy each other's company. One evening they're over at cat's house and there's a knock on the door. Cat goes to the door and it's his uncle. Uncle, he says, come in, I'm glad to see you. His uncle said, well, I'm glad to see you too. But he said, I'm old and I'm going to die soon, and there's something that I have to do before I die. He said, there's a drum that has been passed down through our family for generations. And it's your turn to take charge of it. And he brought this beautiful little drum out. And he said, now this drum is very special. In order to make it play, you can't hit it. You can't strike it. You can't beat it. You have to stroke it. And it'll play for you. Ba-da-da-dum, ba-da-da-dum, ba-da-da-dum. Oh, he said, that's marvelous. And Rat went, oh, that's great. We can make beautiful music with that. And Uncle said, no, only a cat can play this drum. If anybody other than a cat tries to play this drum, bring them tremendous bad luck. He said, but I have to go. I have someplace else I have to be. And he left. Well, they sat there and they looked at the drum and it was getting late. The cat said, well, we best go to bed. It's going to be a long day in the garden tomorrow. A lot of weeding to do. Rat said, yes, there is. And he left and went over to his house. And he laid awake all night thinking, got to get that drum. Got to play that drum. That is so neat. How am I going to get that drum? Next morning, Cat came over to get Rat to go out in the garden. Rat's laying in the bed. Moaning, oh, I'm so sick. Oh. Cat says, Rat, what's the matter? He said, I don't know. Must have been something I ate. I woke up this morning with a bellyache that just, oh, I'm so sick. He said, you want me to go down the road and get the granny woman to come and doctor you? He said, no, I think I'll be all right. I just need to stay here in bed for a while. He said, I think this afternoon I'll be okay. Cat says, all right. He said, I'm going to go out to the garden and start to work. So Cat went out to the garden. As soon as Cat got down the road, Rat slipped out his back window, slipped in Cat's back window, took that drum and started to stroke it. Ba-da-da-dum, ba-da-da-dum, ba-da-da-dum. Oh. Suddenly, Rat looked up and he saw Cat coming back down the road. He put the drum down on the table, out the back window, in his back window, into the bed. And Cat comes in the door. Rat, I just came back to see how you feel. Oh, I'm sick. Oh, I'm still feeling terrible. Cat says, well, all right, I'll see you lunchtime. And Cat started to go and he stopped and he looked back. He says, you sure you're all right? I'll be okay, but right now, oh, I'm so sick. Well, everything would have gone all right except for one little thing, a mistake that Rat made. When he jumped into bed, he forgot to pull the covers up to cover his boots. He still had them on. Cat saw this and he went, oh, something going on here. So Cat went, all right, I'm going to go back to the garden. I'll see you now. Cat slipped around the corner of the house and hid. Rat waited a few minutes to get, all right, he's down the road now. Out the back window, in the back window, picked up that drum. He just stroked it one time. Brum, the door flew open. Cat said, you sneak. Wasn't nothing wrong with you. You came in here to play my drum that you knew you weren't supposed to play. Give me that drum. And he jumped at Rat. Rat was so scared, he threw the drum at him. While Cat was yelling at him, had his mouth open, the drum went right in Cat's mouth and stuck in his throat. Cat. And Rat ran right between his feet and out the door. Out into the brush and been gone ever since. Now, ever since then, cats and rats just haven't gotten along. But if you have a cat, you can make him play his drum. Now, you can't strike it, and you can't hit him, and you can't beat him. But if you take him in your lap and stroke him, he'll play his drum for you. But it's kind of muffled because it's in his throat, so he goes, brum, brum. Now you know. I've told you some stories from here in this country. I've told you a story from Ireland. This story comes from the Hebrides in the Western Islands of Scotland. Now, one of the neat things about the Hebrides is that there are seals that live there almost year-round. It's a warm area. There's a warm stream of water that comes by. And particularly off the north coast of the Isle of Skye, they take people out on boat rides out to see the gray seals on the rocks. But there's a legend that there are certain seals that if they come on land will turn into a man. And they're called silkies. And this is a story about a silkie. It's called Grayling.
What?
Grayling. Once upon a time, there was a fisherman and his wife who lived down by the shore. A little cottage made of stone and covered with seaweed. It was very cool in the summer, very warm in the winter, very cozy. And every day the fisherman would row out into the Minch in his boat, and he would cast his nets, and he would catch the fish, and he'd bring them back, and he'd take them to the village up on the cliff and sell them. And this way he and his wife made a comfortable living. And in the main, they were quite happy, except for one thing. They had no children. And his wife had always wanted a child. Well, one day the fisherman was down mending his nets, and he saw a commotion in the shallows. And he went down and looked, and it was a seal pup that had been stranded in the shallows and couldn't get out. So he walked down and he picked the pup up to take it out to the water. And as he picked it up out of the water, it turned into a baby boy with gray eyes. And he looked and he said, "Well, it's a changeling, a silky." And he said, "This will make my wife happy because now she'll have the son she's always wanted." So he took the baby back up to the cottage and he said, "Look what I found. Here's the child that you've always wanted." And the wife was happy. And they named the boy Grayling because his eyes were gray. And they raised him until he was about 16. And he helped his mother in the cottage. And he helped his father by the shore. But he was never allowed to go out in the boat. And he was never allowed to go into the water. Because they knew if he went into the water, he'd turn back into a seal. So every day he went down and he helped his father mend the nets. And he watched his father as he rowed out into the Minch to cast his nets and catch fish. And he helped his father haul the catch up to the village and sell it. And he grew up to be a fine, tall, handsome lad. And one day there was a great storm that sprung up very suddenly. And the Minch went from being normal rolling water to towering waves. And the waves crashed onto the beach and crashed up so far that they almost reached the cottage. And Grayling and his mother took refuge on the cliff. And they looked down and here was the fisherman in his boat, struggling to try to get through the breakers to get to shore and get into safety. And everyone realized that there was no way he could make it. The boat was too small. The sea was too fierce. The storm was too great. And as they stood there on the cliffs looking down, the waves dashed against the base of the cliff and the fisherman's boat being swept closer and closer to the rocks. And the woman cried, "Is there no one who will save my husband? Is there no one who can save him?" And all the villagers turned away because they knew that it was hopeless. And Grayling shouted, "I'll save him, mother." And he ran to the edge of the cliff before she could stop him and he dived into the water. The villagers ran and grabbed his mother because they were afraid that she'd throw herself after him. But she stood there in shock, having lost both the people that she loved. And as Grayling hit the water, he felt the force of the water tearing his clothes off, and he felt his body change. And suddenly, beside the fisherman's foundering boat, there appeared a great gray seal. And he grabbed the fisherman in his mouth and towed him into calmer water and helped him ashore, and then disappeared. So the fisherman was saved. And when the storm abated, the fisherman and his wife rebuilt their cottage. The fisherman found what was left of his boat and repaired it. And every day he rowed out into the Minch and cast his net and caught the fish and took them to the village and sold them. And their lives were very peaceful and very happy. And every year, a great gray seal would appear in the shallows and swim around for several days and then depart again. But at night, he would come ashore and change into a man and tell his mother and father of the things that he'd seen in the oceans of the world. And that's the story of Grayling. One more. Well, let's see. Okay. One time, First Maker was walking through the forest. And he came upon Dog. And he said, "Dog, how are you doing?" And Dog said, "Not well. I'm bored. There's nothing to do. I want something to play with. First Maker, make me something to play with." And First Maker said, "Well, what would you like?" He said, "Well, first of all, it must be fast so that I get a good workout. And second of all, it should be colorful so that I won't lose it and I can find it whenever I want to play with it. And third of all, it shouldn't be too smart, so that I can catch it occasionally." First Maker said, "I'll see what I can do. Come back here tomorrow and I'll have something for you. But now go away, because I must do things that you can't see. And first Maker went walking through the forest looking. Now, he wasn't looking for the new thing, because it was going to be a new thing and it had never been made before. He was looking for things to make the new thing out of. And he came upon Buffalo, and he said, Buffalo, are you using your horns? And Buffalo said, why, no, I'm not. I fought with them this morning, and they're rather heavy. You may have them. So he took Buffalo's horns, and he walked down by the stream, and he saw some beautiful flowers, and he gathered those. And he walked to where the stream flowed into the pond, and the pond was flat and still, and he saw the reflection of the sun in the pond, and he took that. And walking through the forest, he saw a spider web, all shining with dew, and he took that. And he walked down by the ocean, and he found a large round stone. And he took that, and he said, I think I have the things that I need. And he went to the forest to his secret place. And he put all the stone down and put everything into a pile. And he went into the forest, and he cut down 6 elm trees, and he laid them in a star across the pile. And then he began to dance around the pile. Danced faster and faster and faster. And as he danced, the sweat flew off his body. And as the sweat struck the pile of wood, it became flames. And the pile was consumed. And all night, First Maker danced, and the sweat flew off his body, and the pile burned. And in the morning, all that was left was the stone. And First Maker picked it up and squeezed it 7 times until it was perfectly round. And then he went to see Dog. And Dog was waiting. And First Maker said, here it is. And he handed it to Dog, and Dog... First Maker, that's not what I wanted. That's not what I wanted at all. What is this? And First Maker said, well, if you don't want it, take it and throw it away. So Dog picked it up and threw it. And it hit the road and it began to roll. And as it rolled, the sphere began to flatten. And it flattened into a disc. And the disc split in two. And Dog began to chase it. What is going on? And as he saw it, the two discs rolling, there were curved shapes and colors and things moving and going up and down and around and around. And Dog chased it until it disappeared over the hill. And First Maker said, well, what do you think now? And Dog said, oh, it's perfect. It's exactly what I wanted. Thank you, First Maker. What is it called? The First Maker said, I call it bicycle. So now you know why dogs chase bicycles.
Gets better and better every year. He's a talented, his whole family. I think they were born music, out of a music case somewhere. I mean, they're wonderful people. They really
are.
We
have a picture of Martin when he was about 18 months old, asleep in a guitar case.
Yeah, I believe it. But they can play any instrument, and they are really talented musicians. For those of you who do not know me, my name is, my friends call me Aunt Peggy. I'm Aunt Peggy Smith from Jacksonville, and my husband and I are folk tellers and storytellers and musicians, song singers, and we go all over the state telling stories in other states, and anybody that wants to hear one, they let us know. Well, anyway, our other storyteller's not here today. Margie Baldwin didn't come, so I'm going to tell you a tale that you may not have heard before. Well, Sammy and Suki, they got married. Sammy said, Suki, what you going to do for an occupation? I don't know, Sammy. What you going to do? Well, I'm going to go out and work in the garden. Well, I don't know, Sammy. Well, Suki, tell me this. Do you know how to card? Yeah. But better remind me what it is first. Well, Suki, you know, when you get wool, after you shear the sheep, you got to get all of the humps and bumps out of the wool, all the trash out. And you have these two cards that got nails in them, and you kind of card, you put the wool between the two cards, and you rub them together like that, and that cleans out the wool. Oh, Sammy, I know I'm so good at that. My mama used to do that, but I didn't know what she was doing. I know how to card. I can do that real good. Well, old Sammy got himself a job working on the road, and he made enough money to buy a pair of cards. Took them home to Suki, and he went on out to work in the garden and clear the field. And old Suki took some wool, and she started carding the wool. cleaning out all that trash that gets in the womb. And she scrubbed, as she rubbed them together, carding, sounded like they were saying, "Widder, widder, widder. Hush your mouth. I ain't no widder woman neither. Now you hush your mouth. I got me a man out there. Widder, widder. Didn't I tell you to hush your mouth? I got me a man out there now, and you hush. If you don't hush, I'm going to chunk you in the fireplace. Widder. Didn't I tell you to hush? Now I'm going to chunk you in there." She chunked him in the fireplace. Well, now Sammy wasn't very happy when he got home from working in the field. He said, "Suki, how much did you card today? I ain't done none. How come?" "Well, them blame cards, they call me a widow woman. And I told them I wasn't a widow woman, but it wouldn't shut up, so I threw them in the fire." Land sakes. Well, he sat down to some cornbread and water. He said, "Suki, how are you at making biscuits? Are you any good at making biscuits?" "Yeah, I'm real good at making biscuits now. My mom used to be the best biscuit maker in the whole county. I know how to make biscuits." So Sammy got another job, and he got 10 pounds of flour, took it home, put it down, and said, "Now, here you are, Suki. Now, make me some biscuits for supper, and we'll be happy." So he went on back out and work in the yard. Well, Suki looked at that 10,000 flour. She dumped all the flour out on the kitchen table and commenced to making her biscuits. Well, now, while she was getting ready to make them, a little teeny tiny gnat was flying around. She pushed, and all of a sudden, the gnat fell into the flour. Well, she looked, and she couldn't find him, so she started blowing the flour. And she fanned it, and she couldn't get it. So what she did, she picked up all the flour off the tablecloth, you know, the oilcloth, took it outside. And she began to blow and blow and blow, and all that flour just blew all over the place, and she never could find the gnat. So that night, old Sammy comes in and sits down at the table expecting some good old hot biscuits, and he says, "Suki, these ain't biscuits. This is old cornbread again. I want some, where are my biscuits? Sammy, did you want a gnat in your biscuits?" "No." "Well, Sammy, that was what was in the flour, and I had to throw it all away. That all went away." "Land sake. Well, listen, I'm tired of drinking water. How are you at cooking coffee?" "Sammy, ain't nothing to making coffee. I can cook coffee." Now, back in those days, you know, they had the green coffee beans. And you had to roast your own coffee and grind your own coffee. Because if you didn't, the green coffee beans. Well, old Sammy got himself another job on the public works and bought 25 pounds of green coffee beans. Took them back to old Suki. Suki, he went on back out and worked in the yard. And Suki took those 25 pounds of green coffee beans, dumped them in the coffee pot. And she commenced to boil in the water, boiling those green beans. Nothing happened. "I believe it might need a little bit of salt pork on it." So she put a big slice of salt pork in it and contended, "That don't taste right. I put a bit of salt and a little bit of onions in it too. That might make it better." And it cooked all day long. Sammy comes in, sits down, says, "Where's my good old coffee, Suki? Sammy, I bought that old coffee all day long and ain't nothing happened to it." So Sammy goes over and looks at his coffee. There's his beautiful old coffee. Ain't done nothing. It got pork in it and onions and salt and pepper. "Suki, you've ruined..." He was so put out with that old woman. Next morning he got up, he didn't say a word to her. He just went on out to work. Suki said, "Well, I think I'll go get me some blackberries." So she put on a petticoat and put on a skirt and headed out to the blackberry patch. Now, you know blackberry patches have stickers, spry patches. Well, she's just picking old blackberries, and all of a sudden, her skirt got caught on a thorn on the bushes. And as she was in her petticoat just picking berries and pears, all of a sudden she looks down. She sees her petticoat. "Whoa, I wonder who this is. My goodness. Then she walks back and she, Sammy, Sammy. Yeah. Sammy, where is Suki? Up at the house, I reckon. And she said, old Suki looks down at her petticoat. She said, well, if Suki's up at the house and I'm standing here, I wonder who this is. And to this day, I don't know if Suki ever realized that was Suki standing there in her petticoat. And that was the end of that. Thank you. There was another story that was written by Tolstoy, who was a Russian writer. It's about the old grandfather. There was an old grandfather one time who lived with his grandson and his wife and their baby, little boy. His eyes could no longer see. His teeth could no longer chew. He walked with a shuffle, and his hands trembled as he ate. One day at the meal, at the dinner table, the old man picked up his bowl to drain the rest of the broth, and it dribbled down his mouth onto the table. Oh, the daughter-in-law was furious. Oh, you stupid old man, you have messed up my table. Go, sit over there on the hearth. You've got to sit over there, and don't ever make a mess again. She didn't see the tears in the old man's eyes, the hurt in his face. He said not a word. But then the next night, as he was drinking his broth, he dropped the bowl, and it crashed to the hearth. Oh, the daughter-in-law was furious. You stupid, messy old man. Look, you've broken my good bowl. Here, take this from now on. This is what you will eat out of. And she flung a wooden bowl at him. She didn't see the tear in his eyes, the hurt in his face. He said nothing. But in his old hands, he took the wooden bowl, and he felt the etchings of a little house that had been carved out on the bowl. And then he felt the etchings of a young woman and a man. And as he went around, he found a little boy playing with a dog that had been carved into the bowl. His mind went back to yesteryears when he was a young man bringing his new bride into the house. And then the new baby. And then teaching the little boy how to carve. He said nothing. And then his mind came back to the present. The next day at lunch, after dinner, they were resting. The boy and his wife and little boy were taking a nap. And the daddy looked down on the floor, and there was the little boy playing with some wood carvings. He said, Nikishka, what are you making? The little boy looked up, and he said, Papa, I'm making a bowl, a wooden bowl for you and Mama to eat out of when you get old. Well, at that, the young boy and his wife knew what they had done, and tears came into their eyes. And that night, they brought the old man back to the table because, you see, they knew that once again, the table was filled with love because the granddaddy was back at the table, and they knew they loved him, and they had heard him. Once again, the family ate dinner filled with love. And that's the story of the old grandfather.